Thank you for listening to the Faith Radio Mornings podcast. Enjoy the conversation.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here. I have confidence in you. You go do what God has called you to do today. And we are here for you. I think I've got the greatest job because I get to talk to you, and I am very excited about that. Happy Wednesday. I think it's Wednesday. Rebecca just gave me the big nod. It's always important to double check, even if something as simple as what day is it? And I'm going to start with a verse that I just love because I've been thinking about this all day, and that's out of the book of Galatians, starting in chapter 5, verse 22. It says, "But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things there is no law." I have to look at that list and say, "Dear Lord, please help me with those things today, because this is what you have given me. This is the fruit of the Spirit, and I need to take love and joy and peace into my day." And that's what we're here helping you do at Faith Radio, and reminding you that God loves you exactly where you're at, and God has a great plan for your life, and you're going about doing His will every day. God is blessing you, and we appreciate you. You know, next week we've got our big spring share, so we're just going to gush over you even more next week because that's how much we love you. And thank you for supporting us in so many ways. Cure International has been our ministry spotlight this month, and it's a network of charitable hospitals and specialty programs serving in 30 countries where medical care is often most needed and least available. In the places where Cure serves, children with disabilities are often viewed as cursed. How terrible is that? Little kids with disabilities are viewed as cursed. Now, together we can help heal these children with disabilities and let them know that they're not cursed, that they are loved by God. And you can visit myfaithradio.com to learn more about Cure, and you can help bring healing to a child in the name of Jesus. My first guest upcoming in just a minute is Paul Goldsmith from Cure International, and we're going to chat with Paul just a minute. A little bit later in the hour, Ken Kaiser is in. He is the chair of communications here at Northwestern, and we're going to talk politics with Kent. That's what we like to do with him. It is 6 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and be back with Paul Goldsmith. It's 8 minutes after the hour. Handsome and talented is my first guest, Paul Goldsmith from Cure International. Paul, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Bill. Got a face for radio. I'm glad to be here.
Exactly. Now, you know, Paul, your name means humble, but I want you to brag about what God is doing with Cure.
Well, that's it. I can brag about that all day long because it is really a beautiful thing. God is still in the business of performing miracles around the world, and you said you had the greatest job ever. I'll have to respectfully disagree, Bill, because getting to tell the stories of these kids that God is miraculously healing through Cure International hospitals around the world has got to be the greatest job.
We will settle that in the parking lot after the show.
Good time.
Yeah. So give our listeners a little bit of a reminder of Cure International. I mean, these kids with disabilities, they're viewed as cursed, and that's just absolutely not what the message we want to send them. But give the listeners a reminder of that.
Yeah, I think we can all relate to that. You have kids, or you were a kid, you've probably been teased at some point in your life for something maybe you're not good at. And in places where there isn't access to care, in many cases, for disabilities, you know, like broken bones or club foot or hydrocephalus, where the baby's head swell, those are seen as curses because there's not treatment, and you must have done something the gods have cursed you. And so you're ridiculed and picked on, and oftentimes mom gets blamed for an affliction that her kids have. And so that's really why Cure International was founded 20 years ago here in the U.S. To really come alongside these families and tell moms and their kids that they're not cursed, that God loves them, and we can treat their condition. And it's really a remarkable thing because it's equal physical care and spiritual care, because they're not just physically broken, but they're spiritually and emotionally broken. And so that's where we are restoring smiles every day and introducing them to the gospel.
Now, Paul, when I watch these videos on the website, and I would recommend all listeners to go to the website, which is cure.org, is that right?
That's correct, C-U-R-E.org.
Yeah, cure.org, and watch some of these videos. And what I love about some of these videos is that most of these stories have kind of a beginning, middle, and an end. I'm not saying that all the problems are cured, but most of them are. And you take a little boy or a little girl with a disability and a deformity or something, and the doctors come in and help heal or cure that child, and they go on to live a very normal life, and they're back feeling in a way they've never felt before. And it's all because we took a chance on them, and we said, yes, they are worth it.
Absolutely, Bill. That's the point. This is not it's not that complicated. We know how to treat many conditions that folks just don't have access to treatment in many places around the world. And so when they come in and with a baby with a disability, and they're told that that baby is cursed, and we say, no, that's a precious baby, and we love on mom and kids and the whole family and tell them how much they're loved. I mean, as you can imagine, when you're in the hospital and it's a strange place and you don't know anyone else around, that becomes a family. So we get to know these families of the children and parents that come into Cure International Hospitals, and that gives us a great opportunity to do a spiritual ministry and to really get to know their story and be a part of that, helping kids so that it can be kids and they can go out and run and play with their friends like they've always dreamed.
And Paul, Cure is partnering with hospitals around the world. They are not creating their own hospitals. They're partnering. So talk about how that works.
Yeah, absolutely, Bill. Well, we do both. At the end of the day, however we can do it best. And, you know, there's obviously, you may have seen in the news this week, a bit of a debate in this country about health care. And we won't get into that here, but there's no debate in many of these countries. There's just not access. Forget about insurance and who pays for
right.
it. There's just not access to the care. So when it makes sense to partner with the Tim Tebow Foundation to mm-hmm. form the Tebow Cure Hospital in the Philippines, like, game on, let's heal kids in the Philippines. And that's what we did. And in many cases, we work alongside existing hospitals, and we put in clinics to treat club foot. Cure is the leading provider of club foot treatment in the world. You don't see a lot of that around here because it's treated instantly, and you don't see kids growing up crawling on their knees because they can't walk, and we treat it right away. That is easily correctable, and we take care of that, and excited to announce we're actually about to treat our 100,000th child with club foot, which is really exciting.
Hmm. I don't even know how you get club foot. How does that happen in the birthing process? Do you know?
Children are born with it, and
okay.
their feet are, and it's named after your feet are turned inward like a golf club, and that's why they call it club foot.
See, these are odd facts known by few, but you know this, Paul, so I'm impressed. All right. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Bill.
I'm a story junkie, so give me another story of a child that has been cured.
Absolutely. Well, we meet kids of all ages and lots of babies, which is wonderful. We can treat them early on, but sometimes kids don't find us until they're teenagers, and that was the case of Sherilyn in the Philippines. Fun is when we met Sherilyn, a 15-year-old girl, she didn't talk, and I don't know if you know many teenage girls, but that's not usually the case. And when Sherilyn came to us, she hadn't really talked for the last several years because when she was 11, she was on the back of a motorcycle with her mom, and her uncle was driving, got into an accident, and she lost her mom and uncle. And as a part of that accident, she also broke her leg. It was not treated properly and didn't heal properly. So you've got this girl who's lost her mom, and this horrific accident, and she can't walk without extreme pain. And that goes untreated. for several years, and somebody tells her family about the Tebow Cure Hospital in Davao, and she comes to us and doesn't say a word. Eventually, once our doctors come out and explain that we can straighten her leg out, this is not a problem, she starts to open up a little bit. She actually starts to say a few words, and she starts to lose some of that fear, and our spiritual ministry team pray with her and introduce her to the love of Jesus, and she actually accepted Christ as her Savior, and it was really remarkable. But the cool thing about this story is not only that, she turned around and asked the surgeon that performed the surgery on her leg so she could have walk without pain. She asked that surgeon if he would baptize her, and he did. it's remarkable. You can see that video on cure.org. I'm not making this up. That kind of stuff happens every day in a cure hospital.
That is incredible. All right, Paul, we're going to take a little break when we come back. I want more stories. These just absolutely take me down. I'm so grateful. I'll be back in a minute. It's 18 minutes after the hour. I'm talking to Paul Goldsmith right now, who is from Cure International. He's a native of Chicago and a bit of a Blackhawks fan. I'm going to go very easy on you because you are in first place, my friend.
Well, that's what happens. So how's the Wild doing?
Let's not talk about that. They lost in overtime last night, but I just soon not go there.
Okay, sorry, Bill.
That's all right. Let's get back to Cure International, the Spotlight Ministry of the Month here at Faith Radio. I love specific stories, and I love the story you just told. And what is it like? Do you have one more we can share with our listeners? Because I just love these stories.
Absolutely. Why would you do this? Cured doctors and nurses get asked that every single day. It, astounds me. Why would you do this? And it's really incredible. So if you go to cure.org, you can read the stories just like I do every day. And it's just like you jump up and down. You want some good news? Good news is happening there. There's a lot of bad news. Here's some good news. I was just reading the story the other day from Egypt. So Cure partners with a hospital in Egypt and treats kids with disabilities, and heard the story of Martina. Martina is 3 years old, a three-year-old girl. She and her brother George have suffered from cerebral palsy since the day they were born, and as a result, their legs haven't developed normally, making it difficult, nearly impossible to walk. And their father, he's a carpenter in Cairo, but doesn't have a lot of money, and their mother stays home to take care of Martina and George. As the story goes, Martina tells us that she actually blamed God for giving her two disabled children, and she went to doctors to seek help for her children, but they were too poor to afford surgery, so they got turned away. And someone told them about the Cure program in Egypt, and Martina's mom could not believe it, that somebody would actually help. So that was the exact question she asked. Why would you do this? And she was very skeptical. Why does Cure help children for free and offer them love and care, she asked. And we simply told her because that's what Jesus called us to do, and to follow him and heal the sick. And so Martina underwent surgery, having physical therapy on a regular basis. The experience changed the family's whole worldview. Martina's mother tells us she regrets every moment she blamed God because he's so kind and guided her to Cure. And the success of Martina's surgery made the family ask, can we do the same for George? And of course we can. So we're hoping to treat George here real soon. Just really exciting stuff that God's doing through Cure.
I don't know if I just feel vulnerable this early in the morning because I'm just fighting back tears when I hear these stories. They're just so unbelievably sweet.
It is. I think that's the nature of God. Anytime we see God at work, even if you're not a believer, it impacts you. You think it's kingdom values, man. Mm-hmm. It's the least of these. And so it's not that surprising, but I had the same experience. It's like, well, what's going on here? And it just doesn't get old when you're healing kids.
No.
it never gets old.
No, it doesn't. Now, I love the specific stories, Paul, but let's talk about Cure International from maybe a broader perspective, what is the mission? I mean, how many countries is CURE in? Where is it headed? What does it want to do? Because if I you know, make a donation just because I want to see these kids get healed, I also would love to know what the vision is of CURE and where is it going?
Yeah, great question, Bill, because that's really important. So CURE is based here in the United States, actually just outside of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And we are in 30 countries around the world, and we're training doctors and nurses in the countries where we serve so that it's sustainable. It can go on generations after we're long gone. And it means that so we're training these surgeons and nurses and care workers, and we're doing that in places, like I mentioned, in Egypt, in Dominican Republic, in Afghanistan, in Kenya, and places that don't have access to care and treating children with correctable disabilities. And so it's just a perfect vehicle for sharing the gospel. You know, Bill, there was actually an article in The Atlantic this week with the headline, "Can Religious Charities Take the Place of the Welfare State?" And that's an ongoing, you know, debate here. But I think the reality is there's quoted in the article is a sociology professor at Duke University that basically says those who attend religious services every week give nearly three times as much as those who don't. So it's really people of faith, believers that come alongside these vulnerable families and say, yes, I will stand in the gap for you. And for relatively very little U.S. dollars, an entire surgery is $1,000 and they're healed. So people come together, small groups, churches. We love partnering with churches. And just here's a way to tangibly put your faith to work by healing kids. So the money is secure. It comes through here in the U.S., and we send it directly to the CURE hospital to heal a kid. And then we're going to email you a picture of the kid that you helped heal. So you can see that kid, you can correspond with that child, and you can tell them you're praying for him at CURE.org.
That's really powerful. Now, so it sounds like there's even an opportunity for follow-up, loving this kid as they grow up, maybe a little discipleship as well. I mean, Jesus calls us to make disciples. This might be a great opportunity to help a child with their health problem and then also lead them to the Lord.
Absolutely correct, because with these conditions, there's follow-up care, just like you would imagine. Mm-hmm. And that's every opportunity for us to build relationships and encourage them spiritually.
And have you had an encouraging month with donations this month? Are you encouraged?
Yes, I'm here to affirm that article.
Okay, I wanted to read
faith
that. Yeah,
are absolutely generous, and Faith Radio listeners are no exception. I'm just blown away by the response.
We're top of the class, Paul.
Oh, absolutely.
Just so you know,
and
we're number one,
got it, man. And you're
we're
so
number
humble.
One.
You're so humble.
Oh yeah.
But,
no
yeah,
question.
But no doubt. But even through that, I mean, man, it's so cool because, like I said, people listening to Faith Radio this month have heard some of the spots on the air about CURE and have responded in kind. We had a gentleman over the weekend that called up and said, "Yeah, surgery's $1,000. I'll take care of one. Sure, no problem. All in one." And we realize not everybody can do that. A lot of people give $100 or what they can. And like I said, it's tax deductible, so we'll email your receipt. But not just that. The exciting part is we send you a picture and a story, so you can have your own. You can own your own story. A child that you helped heal, and not only physically but spiritually.
That's awesome. We just love this organization, and your stories are great. And I just appreciate you coming on the show this morning. And good luck with your Blackhawks. I don't think you're going to need it though.
I think you're going to need it.
I know. Oh, thanks.
Thanks.
Have a great day, Paul. It's 26 minutes after the hour. We will be back after news with Kent Kaiser. Good morning. It's 29 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here with you. We're going to take a little news break, and then when we return, Dr. Ken Kaiser, chair of the communications here at University of Northwestern. We are working at getting him a promotion to SOFA, from chair to SOFA. That's my goal. I'm going to get him so comfortable. Be back in a minute. Four minutes after the hour, the saying goes that we hurt the ones we love the most. Speaker and author Karen Eamon says we need to watch the harsh words that can come out at home.
What I see rise to the surface the most is angry words within the home, with either their spouse or with a child. That's where they seem to struggle the most. They may be able to hold it together with the dry cleaners who just ruined their favorite sweater, but they let go and unload on the toddler who just accidentally spilled grape juice on the carpet. And I think the reason sometimes that we do that is because our families have to love us. They're stuck with us. You know, they're our family, and it's that old familiarity breeds contempt. Sometimes, you know, it's much easier for me to just let it fly when I'm upset with my husband than to do that with a stranger or with one of my good friends. Because, boy, if I do it to one of my good friends, maybe they'll go find a different friend. But I don't think my husband's going to go find a different wife because I just, you know, speak in a tone that's a little, you know, condescending, or maybe I bark at him once in a while. He's going to stick around. So it's easier to kind of let your guard down and treat your family in a way that you would never treat a friend or a stranger.
You want to hear Karen's full interview, you can find that on our website at myfaithradio.com. In studio right now, I have Ken Kaiser. We'll be back in just a minute.
Missional drift. It describes what happens when you set out to do one thing and end up doing quite another. This is Jim Garlow, and missional drift is exactly what's taking place in our culture today. We're becoming a culture of the acculturated, unfortunately, even in the church. To be acculturated means complying with the culture in which we live. Ask yourself, are you in any way compromising or becoming attuned to the world's ways at the expense of God's ways? A lack of discernment, and certainly in many cases, a lack of biblical literacy, is a huge problem. If we don't know what the Bible says, if we don't understand God's ways, we end up drifting towards opinion and so-called tolerance. We need to get back to foundational, righteous issues and principles. If we don't, we'll just continue to drift, compromising God's truth and God's ways. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
It's 36 minutes after the hour. Dr. Ken Kaiser, who is chair of the communications here at the University of Northwestern. And I just told our listeners, Kent, I'm going to get you promoted to SOFA.
Oh, nice.
Which is going to be a nice promotion. I'm working on your behalf.
Bigger role.
Kent, I am always looking out for you. I am working on your behalf all the time. All right, let's talk about some of the things in the news, especially when it comes to young voters and how they feel about the president.
Yeah, it's really interesting. A new poll out shows that the young voters are actually the most supportive of Trump of any. This poll shows that young people support him at 57% support what he's doing. And this is really kind of a surprise. People thought that Trump supporters were people who are maybe 50 or even 60 and older, and they're supportive, but mm-hmm. not even to the level that young people are. And that's the people who are 18 to 29. It's sort of like in the middle where Trump struggles with you know, his popularity. He's not that popular with people who are between like 30 and 50. But you know, it's like, you know, it's just kind of a shock. I don't know if we've seen a conservative have that kind of support since maybe Reagan. I mean, I kind of grew up in the Reagan era. I can remember when it was actually sort of cool to be a Republican, and it would have been uncool to be a liberal. In fact, the word liberal was sort of a dirty word back then, it seemed. I mean, they actually used it as an epithet in campaigns and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that certainly changed over those 30 years and stuff. But now this has happened. One student, and I don't know if this is a trend or whatever, but this student seemed to think that there was something to the idea that, you know, you see how shrill many liberal activists have become. And so if you're a normal kind of non-involved everyday sort of voter or just somebody who doesn't really necessarily pay close attention to politics, you just sort of recoil from that shrillness. And so he thinks that we're on a trend to see young people become even more conservative or to align themselves even more closely with Trump and conservatives because they're, you know, having this reaction to what they see as this overblown liberalism over the past, especially the last year.
Mm-hmm. What do you think Mr. Trump has done to ignite in the minds of these young voters such excitement?
Well, you know, there are the sort of the reality television generation, and he comes directly from that. But I think they just like his no-nonsense kind of style. I mean, I've heard it at the gym just like two days ago, there were these young guys talking to him about Trump, and it's sort of joking and laughing around. But like you could kind of tell that there was some seriousness about what they were saying, and that they just love the way that Trump doesn't take any grief from anybody. They just says it like it is, and somebody else says he just negates, you know, what other people say, and he doesn't care what people think. And they just love that about the guy. Mm-hmm. And I guess I can see it, you know. And now on the other hand, I mean, this is exactly the kind of thing that, you know, people who are maybe above 30 don't like about the guy, that he's so rough around the edges and that. In fact, the next age category, the people who are like 30 to 39 only support Trump with like 19% or something. So it's much lower. It's just a stark difference. It seems like the younger people are, the more supportive they are of the president and his policies.
So what else do you hear in your water aerobics class?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Water aerobics. Well, nothing in there. No, I mean, I just it's interesting to hear the everyday conversations of people, because I feel like, you know, as an academic, you hear from your colleagues. Well, I mean, and they're not like the everyday person. And then you hear from students a lot, and they're not the normal everyday person either. But when you go to a place like the gym, you're hearing from normal people, you mm-hmm. know, what their thoughts are. And it's I think that, you know, there's a lot more support for Trump than what the mainstream media would suggest. And again, if he's got the support among young people, that's pretty profound, because I can remember people talking about when Obama was first elected and how much support he had of young people. Well, they're not so young anymore. They're the ones who are in their 30s now. But people talked about how the Democrats were going to have the electorate locked up for decades to come because we were on this trajectory.
Threat.
And in fact, Obama talked about that, how he, in one of those last interviews that he did as president, how he talked about that was sort of like one of his legacies, is that, you know, he had changed the mindset so that now we were on this trajectory for long-term. Yeah, that's
something like that.
Long-term liberalism. And these polls suggest that that's not the case at all. That maybe it's not about policies. Maybe it is about the personality. But it seems like when they were polling these people about policies, they're supporting Trump and the policies.
Yeah. Now, as a non-academic, that'd be me, let's talk about some of the first ballot tests that are coming up in the House elections.
Yeah, people are wondering, you know, what's going to happen in upcoming congressional elections. Is Trump unpopular enough so that it will have a ripple effect on Congress in upcoming elections? Or is he popular enough so that the Republicans might make gains in Congress or whatever? And some people are looking forward to 2018 for that. But we don't even have to look that far, because we've actually got some special elections coming up. Two of them are most interesting, and they come as the result of Trump having appointed a couple of members of Congress to his cabinet. One is in Montana, and Montana is so sparsely populated that whole state has just one congressional district. And so it's a statewide race there. And this one's interesting because Montana, we would normally think of as being sort of conservative, but they actually have a Democratic governor, I believe, and a Democratic senator. So it's possible on the statewide level for a Democrat to win, for sure. And to be sure, they're usually a more conservative Democrat. But we've got an interesting contest that's coming up there then for a special election for that seat. And we've got a couple of candidates there who are interesting. I mean, on the Republican side, we've got somebody who's actually lost an election for governor before. And on the Democratic side, we've got somebody who's fairly well known in the state. The other interesting one is in Georgia. And this is a district that has been solidly Republican for a long, long time. In fact, it was once held by Newt Gingrich, the former Speaker of the House. And one would think that this would be a slam dunk for Republicans. But Trump won that district by only a point and a half over Clinton. And the early polls are showing that there's one Democrat in particular who would be, you know, at this point poised to beat the probable Republican. And so because this is a Democrat who's, again, well-known. And so that'll be an interesting seat to watch. There's a couple of other seats coming up that are kind of more safe. There's a seat in Kansas that's probably going to go Republican no matter what, for example. But those two are going to probably be, I guess you could say, a bellwether or whatever of what's to come in future elections. That's how we usually watch these special elections to see, you know, does the president have coattails or does he have a shield?
Yeah, well, liberals are certainly mocking the president as being ineffective. And I'd like to pick up that conversation after the break because I think they're doing that and it's at their own peril.
True.
Yeah, so we'll take a break. More with Dr. Ken Kaiser. It is 45 minutes after the hour. Be back in a minute. Minutes after the hour, Bill Arnold here with Dr. Kent Kaiser. We're talking what we always talk about with Kent on Wednesday, politics, and what's going on in that world. Now, the liberals, Kent, are often mocking the president as being ineffective. It's easy to joke, isn't it?
But it's easy to look at their little world, which, you know, for legislators is legislation. So Congress, you know, if anything gets stopped there, they think that there's a problem with the administration. What people aren't seeing, and maybe it's even better for Trump that people aren't necessarily focused on it, but all of the actions that he's taking that don't require congressional approval, it's been incredible to see all of what's been happening. I mean, behind the scenes, just one example, you know, one of the things that the liberals are mocking the president for is being slow, so-called, to fill many positions in government. Well, he doesn't want to fill them. he figures that if he leaves them empty, then less will get done. And that's exactly what, you know, as conservative, you would want. You don't necessarily want a robust bureaucracy to be, you know, imposing regulations and so on and, you know, enforcing regulations on people. And so he's left hundreds of positions open, and he's literally said that he doesn't want to fill those. And so that's very purposeful. And so that's just one example. But the other things that he's able to do, I mean, he's been reforming government in ways that people don't even realize yet. He's got one executive order that he passed that's really kind of thrown, I think, government for a loop, where in order to impose a new rule, you have to pull back two old rules, you know, or obsolete rules, or reduce it by two rules. Well, and rules have the authority of law. And so basically he's pulling back, you know, these regulations and burden on people behind the scenes. Some other things that he's been able to do, you know, he's pulled us out of these environmental extremist agreements. And so that's just a couple of days ago where
that was my next question.
Yeah. Well, now, you know, he's lifted the moratorium on coal mining, which should be a big boon to, you know, certain states like West Virginia and others. And while that may not bring back jobs because they maybe have automated those industries a lot more than in the past, it will certainly generate more economic activity in those areas. So that's good for those states. And he's also, of course, already said that we're going to build the Keystone Pipeline that's already underway, as a matter of fact. And so that's a big reversal from the Obama administration. And so getting out of the way of industry and getting out of the way of these businesses is a big thing that the government is doing right now that people don't necessarily see because it's not part of legislation. And, of course, there's the one big thing he's able to do was nominate somebody to the Supreme Court. Now, that nominee hasn't been confirmed yet, over half of Democrats in the Senate say that they're going to oppose, have already said they're going to oppose that nominee. But because the Republicans have the majority in the Senate, they could impose the same rule as they do for all other judges and just give a simple majority to put that judge on the Supreme Court. I think that that's probably pretty likely what will happen. Right now, we use simple majority to put federal judges on the bench, and we've got a rule right now where it's you require 60% of senators to vote for somebody going on to the Supreme Court, but you know, the Senate could change the rules to make it a simple majority. I think that's probably what's going to happen.
What about the president's initiative to undo some of President Obama's climate change efforts?
I think most, you know, rational people will say that that's a good idea to here's the problem with many of those efforts is it just basically adds cost to products that we produce in the United States. Mm-hmm. Other countries don't abide by these agreements, for example, China. And so what happens is that you put yourself just at a huge disadvantage. The reality is that the way that things are produced in the United States is much cleaner than most other places in the world. And so if you sort of hobble yourself in terms of your industry, it's not actually helping the world environment or something like that. And so it's probably rationally, it makes a lot of sense to pull out of these agreements that looked good for Obama. I mean, certainly looked good for his constituency. You could say that he was trying to have a positive impact on the environment. You can see how alluring that would be to a candidate and how alluring that would be to a liberal candidate's constituency. But when you get down to the reality of the actual impact, it's just not worth the cost. And that's what Trump has said, conservatives have said, for years. And so Trump's actions on those items are just right in keeping with that belief.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think that the president has these regrets that he didn't go after tax reform first?
I don't know. I think it's dumb that he didn't go after tax reform first. Or here's what I really think. Like, you know, he should have gone for his infrastructure bill to begin with. The infrastructure bill, though, would not be all that popular with conservatives. So he's going to be asking for like $1 billion of infrastructure. He talked all through the campaign about how the airports and roads are falling apart and bridges and stuff. And I think he'd get bipartisan support for that particular bill, though. I mean, we even heard the very liberal Senator Schumer of New York saying that he would support an infrastructure bill. So I think he might have, you know, he should have started with that. I think some people have said that he only got down the path of trying to repeal and replace Obamacare because of Paul Ryan. And so if that's true,
what does that mean?
That was bad advice that Paul Ryan supposedly convinced him to go with that first on the legislative agenda. I don't know if that's true or not, but if that was true, then that was probably poor advice because we all knew that that was going to be contentious, and the Republican Congress didn't seem to have ducks in a row in terms of having something to replace Obamacare with. There are those in the Congress who I think that they can just repeal Obamacare and do nothing else, but that's just not reality. There's no way now that there could be nothing in place of Obamacare. There's got to be some kind of a replacement.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just shocking to me, though, that after 8 years of griping about Obamacare, that they came into this Congress without a good, solid plan that they knew would pass. And it's just shocking. And Paul Ryan, it just shows like there's a real difference between Paul Ryan, who's the leader of the House, and Mitch McConnell, who's the leader of the Senate. You can tell Mitch McConnell knows how to count noses. You saw this in the confirmation of Betsy DeVos for Education Secretary, where he could allow two Republicans, one from Maine, one from Alaska, who were kind of in liberal states who had constituencies who maybe didn't like DeVos. He could let them go, and he gave them a pass, didn't give them any grief about not supporting the nominee,
mm-hmm.
Because he knew he had all the other votes that he needed to get her through. And you know that he's going to go back, of course, to those senators later on when he needs another vote because now they owe him. But on the other hand, here you've got Paul Ryan with this vote, which is signature legislation, and he obviously wasn't able to count the noses to know that it would pass. And so we wind up with this debacle, which, you know, sets the president off on a very poor legislative path when you have a defeat to start, a big defeat to start.
Kent, we just have about a minute left, and I know Saturday you're going to Egypt for 3 days, which to me sounds like a little bit of a fraternity hazing. But talk about that. What are you going to be doing?
Well, I'm going to a conference and presenting a paper, which means giving a little lecture, basically.
Okay.
And then I'm listening to other people's lectures who are all doing research that is similar to mine, which is on sport communication, actually. But, yeah, it's crazy to in theory, it all seemed so great. But now I'm looking at it's about 2 days of flight each way for being there for 3 days.
Right.
But I'll be in the biblical city of Alexandria, which is where Mark set up the church originally. So it's a historical city. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, when I think of sports communications, I think of Egypt. So.
Yeah, right. It's interesting. This conference moves from year to year to different cities, and this just happens to be in Egypt. But an opportunity to see a cool country.
Great conversation today, Kent. I wasn't bored once, so thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me on.
Have a great trip, and I won't see you next week, but the week after.
Sounds great.
And I want full details on the trip.
Will do.
It is 56 minutes after the hour. I'll be right back with more Faith Radio Mornings. Thanks for being with us today. It is 58 minutes after the hour. Good morning, Bill Arnold here. If everything goes according to plan, next up will be Bill English from BibleandBusiness.com. Always a welcome guest. We look forward to that. We'll take a short news break and be right back.
Thank you for listening to this conversation from Faith Radio Mornings. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings. Also, take a moment to subscribe to this podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a show.